Today in Movie Rollers, we talk about Shazam and Us. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasri as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Greetings all, one and all.
Again, on a Sunday afternoon, recording a podcast of dubious quality.
Of dubious quality?
No.
Why?
I mean, no. No. Of very extraordinary high quality. I'm hoping there's not... I'm hearing a lot of background is what I'm complaining about here. But I think it's because
you have headphones on and we don't.
I think it's these noise-cancelling headphones. So, just a story. I lost my noise-cancelling headphones, left them in a rental car about a week ago. But to their credit, Hertz found them and mailed them back to me. Yeah. So Hertz, all is forgiven. I normally grumble about rental car companies. So
they mailed it back. But
I've never used these headphones for recording, so hopefully this comes out okay. Anyhow.
Maybe you should have tested.
I should have. It's like everything we do on Movie Rollers. This is strung together with bits of string, but hopefully this sounds good to everyone listening. So we've got a couple of movies that I'm really... one of them in particular, I think, is highly anticipated by all of us. But before we go into our reviews this week, we did want to do our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on VOD. And we do this because often, right these days, it's wonderful days for movie fans with lots of streaming services, Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, tons of stuff to watch, but if you're like us, you can often sit down and think, what shall I watch today, and get lost in the mess of it all. So, what's in your VOD queues this week?
So I have one from, it's an older movie, and it's one that I actually caught on a plane a while ago, and it's called the Jane Austen Book Club, and I'd heard great things about it. It has Emily Blunt, it has... Kathy Baker, Amy Brennerman, Maggie Grace, Jimmy Smits, lots of people that you would recognize but aren't necessarily huge A-listers other than Emily Blunt. But it's this beautiful movie about how these six or seven people get together and they form this book club around Jane Austen novels. And it's interesting how when they read each of the novels, it starts to help them in their real lives. So... it's just this beautiful movie about life happening in a California town and just the power of sort of great novels. And, of course, they reference Jane Austen novels, which are always great. So lovely, lovely little movie for a Saturday afternoon if you've got nothing else to do.
Very good. Before I give the name of...
Of course. Were you saying the dubious noise? Because Yasti and I keep crackling our throats.
Well, yeah, both of you.
We've got bad cold. I've got a bad cold, so apologies.
And I have a frog in my throat.
Okay, I hope I didn't give you my cold.
No. It's been around for a while.
Then maybe you gave me your cold. Thanks.
Yes. Anytime.
Sorry.
Before I name my recommended movie, I should say that I am the least... I'm kind of a curmudgeon when I'm watching movies.
Not just movies.
Yeah, I'm a curmudgeon in general.
We have noticed, yes.
But, you know, there are like movies which everybody laughs and I'm like, okay. You know, barely cracks a smile for me. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen me like howling in a movie. I seldom...
Very rarely. Yeah, very rarely.
I'm not easily
But I do
amused.
Like when you laugh.
Right.
But yeah, you're not a belly laugh kind of guy.
I'm not a belly laugh kind of guy. But if there is one movie which makes me belly laugh, it's the movie Death at a Funeral, which came out in 2007. Hard to believe.
Same year as Jane Austen Book Club.
Yeah. Almost 10 Maybe years ago.
Maybe a good
ago,
year.
12 years ago. But God, that movie is howlingly funny. It's about this very cultured funeral that's going on. Very decent and very... you know, all the guests gather, and then things just completely unravel. And it's one set of hilarious events which happen after the other. And none of it is, you know, manufactured or, you know, I don't know. It's just is a funny movie. Just take my word for it.
And you're talking about the English version or the American remake?
I'm talking about the English version. There was an American remake with the same name with Chris Rock in it, I believe.
He produced it. Peter Dinklage, Kevin Hart, Martin Lawrence.
Right, a lot of folks. But the original British one is just a very high bar for me. I love that movie. Just thinking about it brings a smile to my face.
Yeah.
So Death at a Funeral.
Terrific stuff.
Good choice.
And, you know, I want to be very unfair to the American one, but I think in hindsight, the movie's just not as good as the British version. Mm-hmm. It's not an awful movie. It'll give you a chuckle or two, but given that we are in a world where you can access both in similar manners, pick the British one. No bias there on my part. My movie is... it was actually a movie from... close to 10 years ago, 2010. The coming out party for Jennifer Lawrence in many ways, mm-hmm. which was the movie Winter's Bone. Mm-hmm. And the movie's kind of gotten a kind of a renewed life, you know, because of last year's Leave No Trace, which was also directed by the same director, Deborah Granik. Winter's Bone is kind of one of those movies that in the moment is, it's just, it's so bleak and hopeless, and it stays with you for a long time. But it's out available on Netflix for streaming right now. And it had a lot of fanfare, I think, when it came out that year as well, simply because of the Lawrence performance. Did she get nominated
That was her first nomination for Best Actor, Best Female Actor, yeah.
But there's a lot to like about the movie other than her performance. I think the bleak portrayal of the hopelessness of middle America, the substance
Hobbs
abuse.
Is in it as well, right?
He
John
is
Hobbs.
Indeed, yeah.
Hasn't been in anything for a while.
Yeah, I miss him.
So again, not a happy smile. It's kind of the antidote. Maybe if you watch mine, then Yazdi's movie would be the antidote to get you smiling again. And Rashmi, yours would be
just
the one to restore
warm
the
feeling.
Warm and fuzzy
yes.
feeling. So three movies to pick from. So again, Rashmi, Jane Austen Book Club. We have Death at a Funeral.
At Amazon Prime.
And then Winter's Bone on Netflix.
And I should say Deborah Granik's new movie, Leave No Trace, which was one of the nominated movies for Best Film this year, is also on Amazon Prime live streaming. Many people consider it the best movie of the year, and they wouldn't be wrong in their opinion.
Yeah, no, it's very, very high up on my list.
I think it was a great movie.
So, terrific. Okay, then two movies to talk about this week. Which one would you like
Let's
to talk about?
Let's start with
first?
Shazam.
Let's do
okay.
it.
And then that can be a nice entree because only Joe and I have seen that. So we'll do a quick review of Shazam and then we'll move on to the us.
Sure. Okay.
So director David F. Sandberg, whose only other credits are the 2016 movie Lights Out, followed by Annabelle Creation, the horror movie. He directs the movie Shazam, which I understand is the next entry in the MCU universe. And it stars Zachary Levi, who I really like. He's been on television for a long time. He has a most agreeable screen presence. Jimon Hounsou and Michelle Borth are in the cast. And the IMDb description for the movie is as follows, which is that we all have a superhero inside us. It just takes a bit of magic to bring it out. In Billy Batson's case, by shouting out one word, Shazam, this street-wide 14-year-old foster kid can turn into the adult superhero Shazam. And I understand this is a remake of a movie which came out in the 80s, which I'm sorry to say I never got around to seeing.
And I didn't realize it was a remake either, and I knew nothing about this particular superhero. So when I heard Shazam, I thought it was the music streaming, music capturing.
Oh, that kind of magic.
Yeah, I thought it might be a
Apple
documentary,
has.
Right?
So
but it wasn't.
Just to explain what that is, that's the app where you can Shazam a song by
anyone.
Getting, yeah, just basically it will identify as any song that's playing, which is also quite magical.
It is.
Nothing to do with that.
Correct. So it's not that. Okay. Right. So
I missed Shazam, the both of you saw it. So I suffer from a serious case of superhero fatigue. Tell me that this is different and fun and worth going to the theaters for.
So I am like you, Yazdi, by this point, and I've said it for the last 5 superhero movies that I think we've reviewed and watched, that I'm beyond exhausted by this genre. And so when this one came up, I was really on the fence about going to watch it. But I'm pleased to say I really love this movie. Aww. There's something so sweet and heartfelt about this that I couldn't help falling in love with it. Sure, it feels a little bit Lifetime movie of the week at times, but most of the time it's kind of Deadpool PG-13 territory, tonally mixed with the Brady Bunch, meets Big and 13 Going on 30 with a little bit of Kick-Ass thrown in. I really love this movie.
Joseph?
So, I mean, I must admit, I'm very surprised. I'm looking here at the Rotten Tomato review, and this movie has been incredibly well received. It's running 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is genuinely surprising to me because it's a very nice movie. Don't get me wrong. This is, Yazdi, you and I always debate about, you know, should superhero movies be joyful or should they be, you know, dark and gritty? And some of that's kind of a matter of taste and style, but for me, I like the darker flavor of the superhero genre. This is the exact opposite of that. It's a perfect antidote to the nullification of the superhero genre. It's fun. It's playful. It has a lot of very memorable characters. And there's a huge cast of characters here because it is based around a family of foster children and their different backgrounds and personalities. Zachary
Levy,
yeah, he is a delight to watch in this. He's very, very fun, just very agreeable and very kid-like. It reminded me of Tom Hanks's Big, where the adult is playing this you know, very youthful personality. And the movie is just, you know, its bad guy is, you know, despicable as a bad guy should be. He's evil and horrible. But he's not scary in the sense of, you know, young children would be frightened of him. But
is that Mark Strong?
Yes.
It's played by Mark Strong. Very, very, very note perfect. So, yeah, it's a really fun movie. It's an origin story. So I think I'm a little fatigued by you know, one day I don't have powers, next day I have powers type, you know, setups. But, yeah, good, clean fun. And I can't remember if... So this is rated PG-13. I think it very nicely walks that line of a PG-13. You know, it's not so you know, sugar coated that the teens will dislike it. Not so gritty and hard edged that, you know, you might worry about taking very young children. It's a really fun little movie.
Yeah, I think what it does really well is it really does capture the essence. Joe, you said it, you know, one day you don't have superpowers, next day you do. And most in the Marvel universe just manage to cope with it, right? In this movie, it really does sort of bring into the 21st century this idea of figuring out what you have and, you know, what you would do. You would want to try all these different things. And there's a great montage in the middle of these two, you know, these two guys kind of figuring out what superpowers he has and setting up these little experiments, which I thought was really fun. And I mentioned the two guys because I think also what makes the movie is the chemistry between these two main protagonists in a way. The chemistry both when Shazam the superhero is around and also when the teen is around. They're just played really well. And I like the fact that it's a good story. And I think it's asking, you know, what is a family and what is love in a family and what does it mean to be part of something? And it sounds so pat and sort of corny when I talk about it. But for some reason in this movie, it just totally works. I just really enjoyed this movie.
I mean, it is pat and it is corny, which is why I'm surprised at how well it's been received here, because I think this is the kind of thing that, you know, are cynical. And maybe it's just, you know, we're all fatigued of this, you know, finger snap Marvel, you know, end of everything kind of. It's not just the nullification of things, but, you know, these Marvel movies have gotten very heavy lately, right? They've gotten very emotionally.
The Avengers, yeah.
Yeah, they're It's
complicated.
It's not the darkness.
They're very complicated.
Well, they're right. They're that's right. They're just they feel very burdened by the universe that they've created. So this feels very, very fresh and joyful. And yeah, it's kind of, it's the fun that we should have had in watching a movie like Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Right? It's playful and sweet.
I should correct myself. It's a remake, not of a movie from the 80s, but from a television show from the late 70s called Shazam, which ran for 3 years, from 1974 through 76. So
I can sum it up if you want. Shazam, 8 out of 10.
Huh?
Super fun. Just super, super fun.
Really?
Great time at the movies.
Yeah, I'm somewhere between a 7 and 8, and I'm going to be very generous and give this an 8 just because, again, I think of all the superhero movies that I expect to see in 2019, I don't think that any of them will be as much fun as this. You're right. You know, I think they're all it's playful. I had a smile on my face all the way through the movie, and you know, predictable, but fun at the same time. So yeah, lovely little movie.
It sounds along the veins of the Ant-Man movies, you know, with Paul Rudd, who's also a very agreeable presence.
Sure.
But those are more, I think those are more polished. This one is going for a younger crowd and smaller scale. No?
I would agree with all of those
statements.
I think it doesn't feel like it's necessarily going for a kid's audience, but it's definitely got a younger protagonist. And so with that comes a playfulness that Ant-Man doesn't have.
Yeah.
Ant-Man is inventive. This one is playful.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Movie number 2 of the week then is the movie Us. So Rashmi, can you tell us about Us?
Yeah, and I think the less I tell you about this, the better. So I'm going to give you a one-line intro.
Yes.
Which is, this is director-writer Jordan Peele's sophomore entry into the film world. And it's basically... a family's serenity turns to chaos when a group of doppelgangers begins to terrorize them. And that's really all I want to say about the movie. And it stars, wow, great cast. Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, who we recently saw, both of them in Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Moss, Tim Heidecker, a very talented Shahadi Wright Joseph, Evan Alex, Yaha Abdul-Mateen, Anna Diop, Callie Sheldon, whole host of other people. So, highly anticipated, had its world premiere at South by Southwest a few weeks ago, and we got to see it just this week. So, Yazdi.
And just before we go there, I mean, we were all fans on the show of Get Out, right?
Yes.
Which big fans.
Jordan Peele's,
big fans.
Debut directorial movie from a couple of years ago. And that movie did incredibly well critically.
Yeah, it was nominated for
Best Movie.
Yeah.
So tell us.
So I could talk about this movie for hours. Since the movie has ended, I wanted to watch it right away because watching it one time is not going to do it justice, I think. And I've been reading up a lot about it as well, and there's all these fan theories going around. I think it's interesting what Jordan Peele is doing. There's certainly no sophomore slump for him. You know, nobody expected him to write, direct, and direct Get Out, which works very well. I think this is actually a much more ambitious movie for him. And by that same token, I think he's throwing a lot of ideas. You know, at the screen, not all of which stick. It all doesn't come together, but I almost like it more for how messy it is. There is countless things which go unexplained. And I think it's intentional because he wants people to debate them and talk about them forever.
And we're lucky we have a movie show to do it.
Yes. How convenient.
Yes.
But I think if this makes the movie sound, you know, academic and kind of boring, it's not. I'm here to tell everyone, and you don't need me to tell you that the movie is exceptionally entertaining, because this movie is now the second largest debut film of 2019. So most people have already gone out and watched this movie, which goes to show. I mean, this movie doesn't have any big name actors outside of Lupita Nyong'o. And it shows that Jordan Peele himself now has enough clout that by virtue of his directing a movie, he can pull in the crowds, which is quite amazing. But let me get back to the movie.
I was going to say, you've talked a lot and not said whether you like it or not.
I love it. Oh, I absolutely love it. This is what I'm saying is that...
What did you think?
I absolutely love it because I think as messy as it is... it's so ambitious, and I feel a little bit kind of how I felt about Sorry to Bother You last year. It was this person who has a lot of ideas in his head, who's been thrown at the screen. Not everything works, not everything clicks, but I was just filled with wonder. The movie was always ahead of me. At the halfway point, I had no idea where it was going. It, in my mind, absolutely confirms Jordan Peele as one of the great American directors, just with his second movie. It's quite something.
Joe.
This is excellent film craft, and I think, Yazdi, I agree with what you're saying, that there's a lot of ideas, not all of them are fully kind of fleshed out here, but I think they are fully formed, and I think he has left us with this space that I kind of came away with Get Out. I mean, Get Out was ostensibly about race, but it was also... not necessarily about race. This movie has many, many social commentary type themes to it, right? The haves and the have nots, and you know, the what is America, and there's just so many little things in there that he's thrown in, but he's done it without necessarily making the movie about those things. You know, it plays out like a thriller. I mean, you know, it's kind of got home invasion elements in it. I mean, you know, it's in the genre of horror. If you were to try and categorize this movie in some way, you'd say, oh, it's a scary movie. And but then it's got all of this other stuff kind of thrown in there. But for me, it was just a really riotous, fun ride. You know, I mean, I played it out originally as a thriller. I think if I see it again, I'm going to get a completely different take on the events that transpire. There's a lot of things that I think deliberately aren't explained. And normally this stuff frustrates me. You know me and my metaphors. I can't deal with Yorgos Lanthimos and his lobster type movie things in there. But with this movie, he has a lot of unexplained, quite bizarre ideas that I'm like, well, how would, and then what, didn't matter. I was having so much fun with the thrillerness of it that it got a pass. So I really enjoyed it.
So I think Joe and I have swapped brains this week.
Uh-oh.
So I really don't know what to think of this. I'm confused about what I watched, and I think it's a good concept that's very well made, but Joe, for me, wasn't wholly explored. And it definitely leaves more questions than answers, but in my mind, not in a smart way. And it feels to me like Peele kind of wrote himself into a corner that he couldn't quite get out of. That's not to say it's a bad movie in any way, shape or form. It's a great ride in the moment. I personally just didn't love this. And I was a great fan of Get Out. I love that it's about us and it's about the US and about its underbelly and how we are, where we're from. And how we live off that underbelly in some ways. I like the social commentary of it. But again, for me, it feels like an unfinished movie. And it feels like... And was it all a dream? I just feel like it's written into a corner.
I can't
get past that.
But is it frustration that you've got here?
I just feel like it's more questions than answered, and I can't even string together a narrative of what is happening, because I don't think we've been given enough information.
We haven't, yeah, I agree.
I mean, the whole movie could be seen as just a fever dream that the Lupita Nyong'o character has had based on an experience she had
or
in
her
childhood.
Kid.
Yeah, or the kid or anything. So I think that's why it's so messy. I think the whole concept, I mean, I hesitate. It's very difficult to talk about this movie without even speaking about the basic premise. And I strongly recommend people don't watch the trailer. It might be too late, but the trailer gives away entirely too much of the movie. But the basic premise of the movie, is it real? How did how did these group of people come to be? Does it represent in each one of us everything that we like to kind of keep hidden and buried? Is that a representation of repression and how it kind of festers and becomes ugly and kind of grows underneath you? Is it about, you know, privilege and race, about how the privilege kind of trample upon the needs of the other? Is, I mean, there's a lot of possible interpretations in terms of the central conceit of the movie. And, you know, there's many things in the movie where I was wondering, well, this doesn't add up. This doesn't join. You know, if this was really happening, this should happen. Like, just to give you a simple example, there's a scene where two kids are trapped in a closet and one of them turns on a matchstick and they start talking in the darkness. That matchstick stays on forever. I mean, they have like a proper 5-minute conversation. I'm like, no matchstick. I mean, at least if they had him turn on a second, like those little kind of logic flaws were in the movie. But I still can't, I can't stop thinking about it. It in its thriller elements, it's excellent. I was nervously laughing through the movie because I was scared. But again, me being the wimp, I don't think this is a horror movie. This is not the kind of movie which is going to get into your nightmares. At least it did not. It just made me think more. I just don't think there are too many filmmakers right now who are kind of swinging for the fences right now and just making something like, you know, there's a lot of influence of Kubrick here. I mean, I saw, you know, things from, you know, The Shining. I saw everything things here. From
every horror
Clockwork
thriller.
Orange,
Halloween.
You know, Halloween, there's so much of it. You know, there's a little bit of Big in it. There's, you know, all kinds of stuff here. So I think it's not your average run-of-the-mill stuff. There's nothing cookie-cutter about it. It comes from the mind of somebody. And I'll completely grant you that it doesn't have the structural elegance of Get Out. Get Out is very clean. And when the movie ends, you have no doubt in terms of what happened, what, you know, who was doing what to whom, etc. This movie leaves a lot of... It's messier. It leaves a lot of open-ended questions. But do I like it any less? No, because I can't wait to kind of, you know, think about it and see it again and figure out. There's a lot of coding. People wear T-shirts which have certain references, and it all needs to be digested.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple of interviews with Peel, and he talks about, you know, he's thrown a lot of little Easter eggs in here. And that's the thing. I mean, this movie demands to be watched multiple times. There's simply no way that the fire hose of little things that he's put in this movie. And yeah, this, I think this is, this, you know, the sophomore slump, you talked about that, right? So many directors end up with that second movie, which is really the movie they wanted to make, right? The first movie is the one they got to make, but the one they want to make is the second movie. And I feel like, you know, he said as much in his interviews. He's you know, being crammed full of these ideas that he now gets to vomit out onto a script and put on us. But I also still feel that, you know, maybe the sense that the movie doesn't, you know, check off all of the, you know, doesn't close all of the loops is in part, I mean, it's even been suggested that it's a pseudo sequel to Get Out and part of a trilogy of movies that are yet to be made. And he's very tight-lipped on that. And again, I can see why many of the elements here are thematically similar to Get Out, but also have their own thing going on too. So, and feel like they're part of something bigger, right? Because again, you don't, it feels like the middle movie of a trilogy where we're waiting for closure of some of the cans of worms that have been popped open.
Sure, yet sometimes the middle one is often the best one, right? Because it, you know, I'm thinking of like The Matrix or Star Wars with the Empire Strikes Back. I like the second one.
Terrible example.
I liked it.
No, I'm kidding.
What I'm saying is, look, there's no doubt in my mind that Jordan Peele can competently direct a great thriller horror, right? I found this difficult to digest with respect to the whole movie exists because of this one event
that opens the movie.
That opens the movie, right? And then, and yet there's no explanation for that, clearly. Now, I've also read and watched a lot of I'm sure as you both have as well, interviews that Jordan Peele's done. And he says that he's got a whole explanation about what that first scene is supposed to represent and blah, blah, blah. But he just hasn't released it to the world yet. So again, I think if you have to think so much about a movie and it frustrates you that much, then something is wrong to me. And again, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it in the moment. But, you know, maybe my doppelganger enjoyed it a bit more somewhere.
I also like, yeah, I mean, so I think even if somebody wants to kind of divorce themselves of trying to understand the movie for what it is, I think if you set aside maybe the last 20 minutes of the movie, everything that comes up to then just works exceptionally well as a good thriller.
Correct.
And I mean, he is really very masterful. I mean, how many times have we seen home invasion movies and have we seen, you know, the boogeyman coming at you and, you know, but he plays all that out plays very fresh to me. And I think a lot of the credit goes to exceptionally good casting. I mean, everybody here, I mean, even I'll get to Lupita Nyong'o in just a second, but Winston Duke, who plays her husband, you know, he's kind of a funny kind of, he's a goober dad, as one of the other podcasts mentioned. You know, he's kind of, he's kind of square, you know, it's very obvious that, you know, the Lupita Nyong'o, Adelaide Lupita, his wife, kind of holds the control of the neighbor of the family within her hands, which is very unusual. There is an action scene which happens where she orders her whole family to stay in the car and she goes out to address it, which is very unusual. You don't see that usually in movies. So it kind of plays with all those conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And about Lupita Nyong'o, I think a lot of the movie depends on her. I mean, she has to, from the beginning, behave convincingly about something that is inherently, the whole premise of the movie is carried on her shoulders, at least until the last 20 minutes of the movie. And she's so good at it, the physicality of it, the how she moves and how she says certain things and how scared she looks. And I don't think I'm going too far when I say that if, you know, Sigourney Weaver got an Oscar nomination for Aliens and if Jodie Foster got an Oscar nomination for Silence of the Lambs and won it, I think Lupita Nyong'o should get an Oscar nomination. I thought Toni Collette last year got robbed out of Hereditary. She was as committed, but I really think her performance is one level above here. So she's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think everyone in this movie does a really very good job of playing two characters, right? And I think, obviously, Lupita Nyong'o has the most screen time and the most to carry in terms of, defining the two worlds, and again, I hope that's not too revealing. But you know, I think everyone here really convincingly plays two very, mm-hmm. very different personalities, and that's really fun to see. You know, again, I think a lot of it's done with, you know, director's help and you know, cast, crew, makeup, everything. But I couldn't. I was completely convinced at any given point in time that there were two sets of it wasn't the same actor playing two roles, and you know, that in itself is an achievement from film craft and acting and movie making.
Yeah, nothing more to add. I mean, I was really impressed by Shahari Wright Joseph. She's mm-hmm. the young girl that plays the daughter. She was brilliant in this movie. I mean, it's hard to steal a scene from Lupita Nyong'o, but she was great. I mean, in what little she had, and again, everyone playing those dual roles was great. I thought
she was genuinely, she was terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. Elizabeth Moss was great in this as well. I mean, everyone was great. It was.
I think it's interesting because each actor has to play somebody who is terrified. And they have to play somebody who is terrifying,
mm-hmm.
yes. you know,
and yes. it's a, and sometimes in the same shot in the movie, You know, they're both on the screen at the same time. And I think that's a high bar. So I'm just thinking in terms of the craft, it must be very, very difficult, you know, to just piece this whole thing together. I mean, the movie has some really good production design, particularly, again, in the last act of the movie where, you know, it goes where I really did not expect it to go. I also like the fact that the movie really takes its time to build. I mean, apart from what seems like a slightly odd incident that happened with Lupita Nyong'o's character when she was a child, the movie takes a good half an hour to 45 minutes before things really go off the rails. And he takes its time building this relationship amongst the family, figuring out the dynamics, you know, how this family interacts with this other Caucasian family. And to his great credit, you know, Get Out was about race in America. And here, you know, the lead character is very, the lead family, you know, Lupita Nyong'o, her husband and the two kids, they're very privileged. Mm-hmm. So he's saying even amongst the privileged African-Americans, you know, privilege itself creates a class. And so there's a lot of, you know, smartness about it. I love the interaction between Elizabeth Moss and her husband. Go on. So the movie takes its time. It's very good writing.
But just to be clear, I mean, I don't think this movie has anything to do with race, right? I mean...
Correct. And he said that, take race off the table. Right. I've heard him in an interview actually say, this isn't about race.
I didn't read that. Other than, you know, I guess in the way that, you know, Get Out plays with us,
right,
the fact that the lead family is, you know, black and not white is unusual in the Hollywood, you know, black-led movies tend to be comedies and, you know, goofball kind of, you know, so that was kind of interesting. But yeah, it didn't feel to me like it was anything about race. It felt very much about class than race.
Ready to wrap this one up?
Sure.
Joe.
Oh boy. I'll be honest and say, you know, I think my initial viewing of this movie has been very much based on the idea that it is a horror thriller. I think the movie has many, many elements in there that will no doubt reveal themselves to me upon subsequent viewings, of which I plan to do. But, you know, taken purely as at face value, I think it's a thrill ride of a movie. It does what it sets out to do very effectively. Leaves me with some question marks, but they're the things that I want to dig into, right? They're the things that I want to, you know, look into and understand and figure out, as opposed to being frustrated because of, you know, some very abstract metaphors. So unusually for me, the movie's, you know, less than complete revelation of its secrets drew me in. And
even with the rabbits.
Even with the rabbits. So I'm amazed at myself wanting to... I'm amazed at the fact that I want to give this a 9 out of 10, and I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I really had so much fun with this. It's a delight, and I can't wait to watch it again and again and again and again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just awed by the vision of, and by vision I mean the mental vision of this filmmaker to kind of create this whole world. And he's created this whole world with its own rules and with its own geography, its own way where people move. And I'm just awed by it. And sure, I don't know what the rabbits mean. I have no idea why the police never come on time. There's a lot of talking about tethering and untethering in the movie that I have no idea what that means. Last 20 minutes, I have my ideas. I still don't know exactly what transpired. And the movie has a conceit at the end which felt really cheap to me. But I'm going to set all that aside because in the moment, it's such a gloriously accomplished B-movie. I mean, even the starting credits, the titles look like a B-movie, like, you know, the ones you saw from the 80s. Mm-hmm. with the red Us and I do think
the
that
Omen
the Us
style music,
the Omen style, oh, that music is so good at the opening credits movie. I love that.
Yeah,
anyway, and I do think the Us actually does mean US as well, because at one point somebody asks in the movie, you know, who are we? And they say, we are Americans. So I think, correct, of course, there's a lot of commentary about we as a nation here as well. I just love the ambition of this movie. I am going to give it a 9 out of 10 as well.
Yes. Wow.
Yes.
Rashmi's going to bring our average down, isn't she?
I got 5 on it.
Are you?
Plus 1. I'll give it a 6. Didn't, but I just wanted to use the I got 5 on it. Yeah. Do, do,
do, do. Great musical do, cues do, in the movie, do, too.
Do. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, I did like all the 80s references. Look, like I said, I don't hate this movie. I'm just more frustrated by it.
Mm.
I wanted it to be smarter, and I think I wanted it to be a little bit scarier.
I think you want it to be a bit more self-contained.
Yes.
Because I think,
thank you.
I get this sense that you're like, what yeah. about, and what about, yeah. and how yeah. about, and, but what does this mean?
Yeah. yeah. And maybe we can have a chat once the show's over, because then we can have, you know, no spoilers.
To frustrate our listeners.
No, I know, so, but I'm just like,
we're going to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah.
After the podcast.
No, I'm just because
I would hate to listen to our discussion if I haven't
too.
Seen the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
This really should have been a spoiler.
I think
cast.
the less you know, the better.
But maybe, yeah. you know,
maybe we'll talk about it again.
If you
some
want to hear
time.
A spoiler cast of this movie, let us know. mail@movierollers.com. Okay, let's wrap things up for today. Unless Yazdi, you had anything else to add?
No, I even don't know what the scissors mean, but. There you go.
Oh, the Jeremiah 11:11.
The Jeremiah 11:11 references. So there's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah, a lot of mirror imaging. Yeah.
A lot of mirror imaging. There's red, and it's in the ending credits.
Hands across America.
Right. So there's a lot here to dissect and evolve. Yeah.
Terrific stuff. Okay, let's end the podcast here. Let us know what you think. mail@movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until our next podcast, it's too many movies, too little time as always. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.